This season of the Future Great City podcast is sponsored by Red Brick Realty, a new full-service boutique brokerage firm focused on helping you buy and sell residential, commercial, and investment properties. Tell Red Brick you heard about them here on the Future Great City podcast, and you'll receive $500 off buying or selling a home, apartment building, or commercial property. You can reach Scott Sturdivant at 314-420-9491 or Scott at redbrickstl.com. This is the Future Great City podcast from nextstl.com. Today, we are joined by Umar Lee, a man that many people know of and a lot of people know in St. Louis. I'll let Umar talk about a little bit about his past. A lot of people know you from the Uber debates that came through St. Louis with Lyft and these ride-sharing things, and at the time, you were driving a cab. You want to start with your story there, and we'll go back, and then we'll go forward as well. But how did you get involved in that process, and what was your interest, and what was your take on that thing? We're still fighting that in a way, right?
Yeah, well, I drove a cab for 10 years for the Klee Cab here in St. Louis. Also drove a cab for a little while in New York and in Dallas. So very familiar with the cab industry and what Uber and the rideshare industry had done to the industry in other cities. When Lyft was coming to St. Louis, and I knew Uber would be next, I wanted to lead the fight because no one else was talking about it. All the other drivers that I was talking to were kind of lethargic because they didn't have experience with these rideshare services. I knew it would decimate the cab industry in St. Louis, and I wanted to try to protect the good working-class jobs that a lot of drivers had. My primary concern was protecting their livelihoods, protecting their ability to care for their families and care for themselves. And that was my primary motivation during this whole debate.
And you ended up also criticizing the MTC. There's a Metropolitan Taxi Cab Commission that kind of runs it. And so, you know, the way this fight kind of played out in a lot of ways was picking a side of the MTC. And I think in a lot of ways it didn't end up being about Uber or ride sharing or good jobs or anything. It was just vilifying an organization, and I don't know what your take on them was. I mean, you're not driving a cab anymore.
I'm not driving a cab anymore. Well, the thing is, I was never a fan of the MTC, so people were getting that wrong when I was defending the cab industry against Uber and Lyft. They were thinking this was an endorsement of the MTC, which I always held it as a corrupt entity, that it doesn't benefit drivers. It regulates drivers, does not regulate companies. Companies basically have a free hand to do their drivers what they want to. People like Dave Minetta, who owns a Cleve cab, sit on a commission effectively regulating themselves. So there's a lot of issues I had with the commission from a driver's perspective. But at that time, the important thing for me was the Uber and Lyft debate. I knew ultimately they'd win, because you're talking about billion-dollar corporations, multinational corporations with a lot of money. I knew that they would eventually win. And, of course, they eventually showed the greatest of all privileges by just ignoring the law, ignoring court orders, and doing what they want to do, which, you know, is a great testament to the economic system we have in this country. And I knew they would eventually win. What I wanted was a fair shake for the drivers coming out of it, a cap on rideshare drivers, some kind of taxation, which is fair to all. We don't have that now, but it's still possible to work.
Well, that's what's amazing is that you were in a sense a lone voice in that, looking for those things, because you had the MTC that was kind of all in on just shutting down the process and not allowing any of it to happen through different processes, and then you had kind of the Uber Lyft argument of just let's just open it up and every other city has it and let's do it. But I don't know if you stay in touch with some of the people who drive and some of the companies, but where does that sit now? Because if we look around the country, like, I think Austin has now basically banned ride sharing because they require the fingerprint. They left. Other companies have sprung up. I mean, I, as far as I know, Austin's still doing okay. You know, so where does this stand in St. Louis as far as you understand it?
Where it stands in St. Louis right now, and I'm talking mostly to the Klee cab drivers and drivers to other cab companies, is their money is down about 60%. And everything happened exactly like I said it would. The traditional cab companies are now what Allen Cab Company was back in the day, or Marcella. In other words, they are the transportation option for the poor, for the working class. So they're in North St. Louis, they're in the State Streets in the South Side, they're in North County, they're in, you know, other working class areas in the city and county. and they're on the voucher accounts, you know, the big voucher accounts that the big companies have, like Barnes Hospital, the Red Cross, et cetera.
Right. To get people to doctor appointments and things like that.
Yeah, and home from the hospital schools. And schools and stuff like that. But the Central West End crowd, the nightlife crowd, the Cherokee Street crowd, all that crowd is over to Uber because it's newer and younger and hipper. And that's exactly what I said was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of drivers I'm talking to, and they're very kind of depressed, and a lot of them are quitting. Laclede has lost a lot of drivers. And the company has not addressed the situation to the drivers at all. They've went up on the amount of money drivers have to pay. And it's a very bleak situation over there right now. Gotcha.
Well, let's segue into something that I kind of hope to get out of the way pretty quick. You're not a fan of hipsters.
At all.
What is a hipster?
You know, hipster is a very vague definition, right. But it's kind of like the Supreme Court said about pornography. I know it when I see it.
Got it. Very hard to define, but you know it when you see it, right?
Very hard to define, but you know
it. Let's talk about an issue that maybe hits on this, because you talk about, and this comes up in St. Louis media, and I've seen you comment on it, whether it's hipsters or millennials and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've tried to do is, I mean, I'm a cyclist, but I wear spandex and I have a nice bike, and I'll ride wherever. I don't care. I don't need bike lanes for me, but every chance I get, I try to take pictures of working class people clearly just trying to get to the grocery store, trying to get to their job on a bike. And so one of the things I talk about is, you know, if we had money to build bike lanes, build them all across North City, like get people an option who, you know, owning a car is, I don't know, on average $3,000-$8,000 a year or something, right? Yeah. Like, let's get transportation options for other people. And one of the pushbacks is always, like, bikes are for hipsters, you know? Like, the only people who care about this stuff.
Yeah.
But why is that? Why don't you see... Because otherwise, if you don't have transportation options, or maybe you're in favor of buses or North-South Metro and other things, but owning a car is really expensive and obviously is a big burden to people living at or near the poverty line.
Okay, let me address this.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there. Number one is you have to realize part of the hipster, non-hipster divide in our urban cities is most of your non-hipster population, they want to live a normal American life. They want to live the American dream. They want to have everything that hipsters had growing up in the affluent suburbs they grew up in, right? They're not on some kind of rebellion against their parents and, you know, stuff like that, right? Part of what they had growing up was good roads. They had the financial ability to have access to vehicles. So what people want, they want good public transportation to get them to jobs. That's why I favor North-South Metrolink. Mm-hmm. I favor expanded bus service. I think public transportation should first and foremost be about getting the poor and the working class to job centers, places where there's a lot of jobs. But the second thing is, if you look at bike lanes, you can go on North Broadway now in Baden. You can read War and Peace before you see a bike. You can go on West Florissant by Calvary and Bell Fountain Cemetery right now. You're not going to see very few bikes in bike lanes. Natural Bridge and Lucas Hunt, bike lanes have done nothing but create a traffic jam. Union and Del Mar, I heard nothing but complaints but from people in the neighborhood about bike lanes on Union. What do bike lanes do? They disenfranchise the disabled, you know, who are reliant on buses. So now they're...
Because of the traffic.
Yeah. Also, the hipster population understands a big percentage of them are childless, or they have a lot of economic resources to raise a child in comfort. Your average St. Louis working parents are schlepping around town trying to get, you know, kids to practice and kids here and kids there, and they need traffic to flow as smooth as possible. They don't need a road diet. They don't need any traffic calming measures and other this stuff. They're trying to do everything the parents in the suburbs have to do to get their kids around town. Again, there's a big point of view. And my friend Steve Smith with the Royale, you can look out in the crowd and maybe see 200 people, and maybe there's 10 kids between the 200 people. Well, they're going to have a big difference in how they look at St. Louis and how they look at development than us filthy breeders. So there's a big...
Include me in that.
Yeah, exactly. Two filthy breeders. Like, yeah,
I'm schlepping kids around here and there all day.
So that's my fundamental concern. It hurts the handicap, hurts the poor. The poor need to get places quick.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, just as a, and this wasn't set up as a debate, but we can go that way, I guess. But
I love the debate, so...
I don't... I don't think there's any, you know, and there's bike lanes on Shoto and things, right? And I see people on social media complain about it. I frankly don't see any evidence of real traffic. Like, you know, if it's 30 seconds, it's 30 seconds. I mean, and I don't think we should just start putting up obstacles to transit, but, you know, we have severe problems in St. Louis that are basic access, and not physically, like disconnected roads and things like that, but then you have daycare that's not near, you know, where people who need it live, and systematic problems that are so damaging to everyone.
It's not the biggest problem in St. Louis. It's just one of my pet peeves.
Right. But here's my question. Maybe we can put a number on it. What percentage of the city population do you think is the hipster population? Because I think we spend so much time talking about this group, and you can't define it in a way. You see it. You know it when you see it. But I think this might be where our
I think hipsterism is a subcategory of yuppieism, right?
Okay.
So hipsters are basically yuppies who don't like the yuppie aesthetic, right? This is why they hate the "where did you go to high school" question. If I go into a normal St. Louisans like me, generations, like, I love the "where did you go to high school" question.
Right.
So you go on Cherokee Street, for example, not to pick on Cherokee, you say "where did you go to high school," right?
Yeah, and people take offense
after,
to,
like,
to being asked.
That question.
I'm
way beyond it. But then they're going to say MICDS, John Burroughs, or one of those type of schools, right? So the hipster, for the most part, is an affluent kid who grew up in affluent suburbia and has developed some kind of alternative look, right? They clean up probably to go out to the country club with their parents on special occasions and events.
Right.
But
take their nose ring out.
Right. They dress like a lumberjack. Have never held an axe in their hand. You know, I mean,
I get the caricature, but my take on this and why I kind of bristle by the way,
it's kind of funny, but it's also a historical connotation.
Sure.
If you look at the 19th century, there were the hipsters of those days were groups of white people who were known as settlers, and they would wear moccasins and they would begin to eat the food of the Native Americans.
So this isn't a new thing, but what I think that where we miss it in St. Louis, I think, and I don't know, I think we struggle in St. Louis by adopting definitions in other cities, and I think there might be larger, more assertive populations as you describe them in other cities, you know, with these characteristics. I think in St. Louis, my view of it is 95% of us are non-hipster. I don't know what the term is. Like, just normal kind of families.
This is not a hip city, you know.
And so that's what I'm saying. Like, when online conversations are other things, right? Low grade hipsters, but their influence is low grade too. And so I feel like when people think that, like, you know, they think the tail's wagging the dog, and the tail is a bunch of, like, you know, Cherokee Street hipsters, I think they've just got it wrong, because we're 2.5 million people, and there are all these different currents of populations and professionals and ages and backgrounds going on.
In the metropolitan area, they may not have a huge influence, but in the city, they have influence. And it's disproportionate, because one of the things that the city of St. Louis wants, and all cities want, they want young, affluent, mostly white kids to move in.
They say that. They say that. But if you look at the influence in the city, it's if you're 55 to 75 years old and white and live in Southwest City, that's where the disproportionate influence is, because that's where the votes are,
that's where the money is.
So why don't you talk about those people? Why don't you make fun of grandma?
That's a given. That's a given. You know, I'm trying to say, there's no even need to talk about it.
You just feel bad talking about it, is that?
I don't want to talk about grandma. Right. You know,
let's go this way. Where did you go to high school?
Went to McClure North.
You went to McClure North. I'm not from here.
McClure North is in the Ferguson-Florissant School District.
Okay.
And it's located in Florissant. McClure North were kids from Florissant, from Berkeley, Kinlock, and Robertson, which Robertson no longer exists. Mm-hmm. And it was a very mixed school racially. One of the things I loved about McClure North was it was very mixed socioeconomically as well. In other words, you had very poor kids there. I don't think you had any real wealthy kids, but you definitely had some upper middle class kids there. So you got to see a variety of the socioeconomic spectrum. You had we had great sports teams at the time, and I was an athlete. I was a wrestler, and I definitely liked the athletic life. We had good teachers. It is very sad for me, you know, to see what's happened to the Ferguson, Florissant School District, where they're near unaccreditation now. Mm-hmm. Three high schools in Ferguson, Florissant. There's McClure North, there's McClure. McClure, mostly kids from Ferguson and Berkeley, Cool Valley. And there's McClure South Berkeley. And the Ferguson, Florissant School District was created by court order in the 1970s. as a desegregation measure because the Kinlock and Smith Robertson districts were African-American districts. Berkeley was becoming an African-American district after being an historically white district, and they merged them with the Ferguson-Florissant schools, which had been racially segregated. So there's a long history of race issues in North St. Louis County, and the school was a part of that. And I can tell you from day one in kindergarten until high school, there was a lot of racial tension that would boil up from time to time.
And, so, and you've written about this. And something we mentioned, and I haven't mentioned yet, is you've been writing for a long time. And something you said to me is you have a larger readership, maybe probably overseas than here. But you have intimate knowledge of North County, just high school, I mean, all the way through grade school and watching a couple decades of changes. And so let's hit on one thing. Let's hit on your family real quick, and then we'll come back to, because I want to come back to, you know, August 2014 and the shooting and killing of Michael Brown and how maybe that's how you came to prominence in St. Louis, you know, as a local voice. But did you have a family history in North County, or it sounds like you have a very St. Louis story of a family kind of migrating through the city.
Yeah, I have a very St. Louis story. I mean, generationally, St. Louisans will have family in the city, county, St. Charles County, wherever, depending where you grew up. So my parents, I was raised with my dad, my dad's family, primarily my grandparents. My grandmother came to St. Louis in the 1930s from the Boot Hill, near to Advance, in Malden, in southeastern Missouri, or Missouri, as you call it, very southern part of the state. Her husband, my grandfather, came from Reynolds County, Missouri, and they're both part of that wave that came in the 30s. They met in 1946 at the old St. Louis Dairy across from Union Station. And they stayed married until my grandmother passed away this past March. So it's an old St. Louis history. I grew up on the stories of my grandmother talking about the St. Louis streetcars and all the great history in North St. Louis of their younger days when, you know, they were living in North City. My mother's side of the family, which I do not know, they were also from here in St. Louis. So I kind of had this history where I'm growing up in North St. Louis County, very much part of North County, and my mother's living in the city, primarily in the Shaw neighborhood of South St. Louis. And at that time, I must mention, it's a very different Shaw neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was, as the hipsters would say, sketchy.
Yeah, and when would this have been? What were the...
This would have been in the 90s, the 80s and 90s that my mother was living there. And she actually just moved a few months ago from Shaw, yeah.
So you love St. Louis, right? Is it okay to say that?
Yeah, I love St. Louis. I mean,
this is your town. Not somebody who came in and just wants to point out what everything that's wrong, like I do, right? I moved here and I just like pointing out.
I would tell you something. I love St. Louis. When I was going to school in the D.C. area, I always wore my St. Louis gear, my Cardinals gear. I always represented St. Louis. They always knew me as the guy from St. Louis. When I was living in Brooklyn and New York, and I wear my St. Louis gear. Matter of fact, I lived in the Brownsville projects in probably the worst neighborhood in all the five boroughs. And the police would mess with me a few times, not bad, because they'd see this red Cardinals gear on and they weren't familiar with it. They'd think it might be some kind of a gang attire or something of that nature.
Some new guy taking over territory.
Yeah, some new guy. Just walking to the trade. Yeah, but I'm a Saint. I love St. Louis, but like a marriage.
Yeah.
You complain about your spouse a lot.
Right.
And I grew up here and I love it. Mm-hmm. And I live here. I never thought I'd come back, but I ended up back here. But obviously, there were things I grew up with that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel, and also, you know, I come from a racially blended family too. And there's a lot of issues that I grew up with that I don't, in general, there were a lot of things about my upbringing that weren't happy. Okay. And when I left St. Louis, there was a lot of stuff that I wanted to get away from, and I felt relieved when I was out of St. Louis. And a big part of that is this tremendous racial tension that defines every aspect of life in St. Louis. I mean, nothing from the trash collection to the schools is divorced from race in St. Louis. And not that racial problems don't exist anywhere else, but you didn't grow up there. You're not a part of it. You know, it's
personal to you.
It's personal.
And you saw it. You experienced it firsthand, but you've seen it change. So,
yeah.
So let's go to Ferguson. And I think some people, I think something you said recently, just about the recent protests, the police shooting, the shooting of police in Dallas and other people, You've said something, and I'll paraphrase it, you can correct me, but, you know, white America is shocked that there's violence in America, you know, so yeah. things like this happen, and people's like, this isn't our country, this isn't, and you're like, yeah, it is, like, right, this stuff right. happens all the time, right? And so this obviously happened in a big way in Ferguson, gosh, coming up on 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Tell us why you were there. I mean, you were on the scene, you had this on Periscope and on YouTube. Instagram and YouTube and stuff, right? Yeah. And there's tear gas coming. You're in the middle of things. Why? Yeah. Hey, first of all, why were you there? And what was that like in your experience?
You know, just to back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Paul Fielder from the Pruitt-Igoe Myth, I talked to him a couple months before Mike Brown was killed by Darren Wilson.
And this is a documentary about the Pruitt-Igoe projects, right. About the history of it,
right?
Residents and things, yeah.
But he asked me, did I ever think there'd be a riot in St. Louis? And I said, if there is, it'll be in North County. 1 week before Mike Brown was killed, there was an election in St. Louis, and there was a watch party at the Royale. And I was there with Michael Powers, the legislative director, with of Louis Reed, and we had a very testy conversation.
That's the city of St. Louis, yeah. President of the Board of Aldermen. Right.
We had a very testy conversation, in which I actually had to push him twice because he was drunk and kept getting in my face. And he said, there's no problems in North County. The issues are all in the city. You talk about North County too much. A week later, we were in a jail cell together in Ferguson.
You had the same conversation or no?
No conversation? Things don't have to be said. Just, you know, yeah. So,
yeah. Why do you think, and whether it's Michael or somebody else, like there was clearly a perception that North County was just out of sight, out of mind. Because you mentioned Pruitt-Igoe, but yeah. there's a Spanish Lake film as well, which opened a lot of people's eyes. Maybe it hasn't been seen as widely as it should, but and it's been, like I said, you grew up there. You lived through this. You saw the decline. No one had to tell you about it, right? And so you knew what you were talking about, and then the riot happens.
So the story, what's sexy about poverty and all these issues and race and all these problems in America is the urban story. It's The Wire. We have a generation of young, urban, you know, probably your demographic, your audience, who watch The Wire, and they want to see row houses and historic architecture and this and that. Not the suburbs they grew up in. They're trying to get away from the suburbs, right? Mm-hmm. But in so many places, in Prince George's County, Maryland, and southern suburbs of Chicago, and in the western suburbs of Atlanta, and you know, you can go on and on and on, and North County is equivalent here, that poverty is moving to the suburbs. Crime is moving to the suburbs. All the social problems in the city are moving to the suburbs. And this is one of the reasons I'm against hipster development, quote unquote, because I see it as a transference of the geography of prosperity. Mm-hmm. In other words, the people...
It's cyclical, right? So you kind of... People leave, a place becomes, quote, abandoned.
Right.
And then investment comes in, and the faces of the people living there changes.
Right. But you can say the Forest Park Southeast is booming now. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody that's booming in Forest Park Southeast was doing bad where they came from. They probably had it pretty good most of their life. Most of them, you know, maybe a few times. You know, but the people who were there previously, are their lives any better? So that's the whole thing, one of my arguments against this development. So North County... Mike Brown is killed. I'm there that day. I see a lot of grief, a lot of sadness, a lot of anger. Unfortunately, I've known of many police killings over the years. And North County, and actually Ferguson is not the worst, not even nowhere near the worst. Jennings and Florissant, those departments are known as the worst department on racial issues. And I was talking with friends, and I'm like, yeah, this is St. Louis. You know, they ain't going to do nothing. They're just going to complain. You know, St. Louis people, they don't do anything. So the next day I'm out there, and the next day is when things really kicked off, that Sunday. And I could feel something in the air. And I told my friend Najee, I said, when the sun goes down, there's going to be some, I don't know if I can cuss on the
I don't know. We'll bleep it out.
Yeah.
Wherever you want
to. It's going to be
right. Yeah.
And the police that night were not prepared for it. It was just the muni departments, not the county, not the city, not the state. No riot gear, and they were completely overwhelmed. And that's when you saw the quick trip burn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So would you agree that, I mean, I think most people's feeling is that there was pent up, I mean, there were some individuals who took advantage of the situation to loot and steal
stuff.
but there was a legitimate, what do you call it? Like,
yeah, there was grievance, not just your grievance,
real honest grievance,
but people who grew up on the stories of their parents and their uncles and their aunts and their cousins. Like I said, growing up in North County, race defined everything.
Yeah.
Everything was completely defined by race.
So this was a point that just boiled over.
It could have happened when I was in high school. Instead, my daughter was out there, who was out of high school. You know what I mean? So it could have happened at any time, and it happened then. And North County, like I said, was, you had so many factors, deindustrialization going on, housing, drug epidemic, the generational issues.
Do you think the people who are protesting understand these things the way that you do, or do you think it's necessary that they have to? Do you think it matters?
I don't think they have to, but some do probably and some don't. I mean, young people is a general. I mean, listen, in the early days of Ferguson, it was young people, young neighborhood people. It wasn't people out there talking about intersectionalism and, you know, this and stuff. It was young people from the neighborhood. I mean, so they knew what they knew. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say? They knew what they knew. But what older people know is, look, you had 15 movie theaters in North County when I was a kid. Now you barely got one, right? Mm-hmm. You had good factory jobs. Now they're gone. You had housing prices good. Now North County is full of vacant housing, right? You had functional city departments. Now you don't. You had good retail. Now you don't. So there's just been this abandonment of North County, mostly to St. Charles County,
mm-hmm.
you know, and coinciding with a drug epidemic hitting North County the worst. All the problems, drug epidemic, right. subprime, hit North County the worst. And no one was really paying attention. You know, trying to say, the focus was still on the city. And all these problems were festering there. And also North County and in suburban poverty in general, yeah, people don't have access to public transportation. Mm-hmm. You know, so many problems.
I feel like we're finding a lot of things we were agreeing on. This is a little bit frightening.
Right, So
no, but this pattern of development is robbing people of opportunity. There aren't jobs. They're you know, they're too far away from job centers, and we don't have there aren't dense job centers, so it's hard to make bus routes that connect where people need to live
and
work.
People are 2 or 3 hours on the bus. That's another thing with public transportation. Is, you know, I love public transportation. Right.
It's hard to use here.
But I know if you go to the Metrolink station or bus stop, 99% of the people in St. Louis are going to say, I'd rather be in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you got to commute an hour to 2.5 hours to work.
Yeah. Well, we've built a region that demands a car.
Yeah, when it's a 20-minute drive or a 15-minute drive in a car, I mean, people are going to say, I'd rather have a car. So, I mean, Glasgow Village, for example, there's no retail. There's no good public transit. People are just basically isolated.
And that's a municipality in North County.
In North County, yeah.
Let's talk about, let's hit one more thing on the protests. And I've written a little bit about it, but I'm not, I grew up in a small town in Indiana, and I'm a fairly white person.
A real Hoosier.
A real Hoosier with a capital H. So I don't have this experience, and I can understand some things and not other things. So I haven't delved into it a lot, but I want to hear from you. Like, what, I guess I set that up to say that I feel like there's a lot wrong with our system of justice. There's a lot wrong with our system of development. And so from my perspective, I sit back and don't try to insert myself, but I give protesters a huge amount of leeway to do lots of things. And so I kind of look at it and think, you know what, a few broken windows, a few smashed cars, almost whatever it takes to bring awareness to this, because it's so screwed up and people are so blind to it that it would take a lot for me to criticize protesters. Where's the line for you? So I wrote about protesters blocking highways and wrote about how highways allowed people to flee to St. Charles. So blocking a highway is actually pretty symbolic and meaningful. It's not just let me piss people off and make them late to work,
right? That was a great idea.
And so where is the line for you? I mean, where do we stop? And, you know, a Quick Trip burns down. No one in the Quick Trip was hurt. And I don't know, maybe no one's going to condone that, I don't think. I wouldn't condone it, but I'm not shedding a tear either.
Yeah, I love Quick Trip, by the way. But,
pretty good. I had a donut from there today.
I don't condone it, but I was on the lot when it happened. I saw it happen. You know, generally, I think when you start talking about violence towards people, I think then you have to draw the line.
But isn't the point of protest in a way? I mean, there are different ways to protest, but, you know, you hear over and over again, I've heard over and over again in St. Louis, people say, you can all protest, but do it over there out of my way and don't inconvenience me. And I always think, well, what the hell's the point of protest?
That's what I said. When protests were in Ferguson in North County, The local media was somewhat positive. I'm not going to say positive, but they weren't that negative. Right?
You mean positive towards the protesters?
Right.
If we recognize there's an issue, they're right. upset about an issue.
In North County. Because, look, nationally, in St. Louis is no different, media is concentrated in two areas. Wealthy suburbia in the downtown district and the hipster areas, right? Because the hipster areas were probably the younger journalists are living, et cetera, and they're familiar with those areas. North County is a very abstract place. Mm-hmm. I mean, murders in North County barely get covered, right? They get covered in North City, they don't get covered in North County, right? So North County is like so out of the way that...
And this is just reality. I mean, I write about things I see, and I drive a certain part of the city and exist in a certain part of the city. And so, I think for a lot of people, Ferguson was like, no one knew if it was 4 miles away or 40 miles away.
And then, and you had a lot of people saying that, you know, and this is another hipster argument I hate. That's Ferguson. We're in St. Louis.
Is that a hipster voice?
Yeah, it's a hipster voice.
Are you kidding me?
Things are a lot different here. You know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
We don't
right.
have those issues in St. Louis. Well, that's Ferguson.
I heard people who live in Kirkwood tell me you don't have those issues.
Right,
you
got
to be kidding me.
Right,
you had a shooting in downtown Kirkwood not too many years ago that was very much surrounding race issues. You know, I mean, these are issues that obviously surround all of us.
So when Von Derrick Myers is killed in Shaw, and then what happens in Shaw with a mini riot and protest, I saw local media attention, coverage flip, because a lot of Shaw is a hip neighborhood.
Yeah, there are a lot of hipsters in the protest,
from
looking at the images.
There are a lot of hipsters in the protest, that's another issue, but Shaw changed things, and local media coverage began to get more negative, because, hey, if you want to do it in Ferguson and burn down your own neighborhood, that's fine, but South Grand, Shaw... That was
But let me ask you this: do you think there's an issue? And this is kind of you tread lightly on these issues, but how much of it, the legitimacy that the media gives it is based on the victim, so to speak. So you had a killing also several days later after Michael Brown in North City, and I've seen the video of that. And this person had a small kitchen knife. The police drive up onto the
Kajima
sidewalk,
and
shoot him within like 10 seconds, right? There wasn't a protest there.
There was, but it didn't. The Kajima Powell situation, what I think, was the worst of all the police
killings. And there's video of it. It's not a conjecture.
I mean, truly horrific. There was a protest, and it was very angry, and a lot of chanting. People were upset.
Kind of immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
The people didn't come back the next day.
To the mayor's credit, I think he used a little finger-like wisdom, and... he had tables brought out for job programs from the city and was going to offer free physicals on site. So he wanted to do the opposite of Ferguson.
Yeah.
He wanted to, quote unquote, kill them with kindness type of a deal, and it seemed to work.
Yeah. And then in Shaw, you had Von Derrick Myers. And again, I'll do my best to tread lightly, but the presumption, I think, in Ferguson, in a way, was that people didn't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Michael Brown wasn't armed by all accounts, right?
Right.
So if you take the police version of it, he stole cigars or cigarettes, was walking home, got in an altercation with a cop, and the cop physically just felt threatened because he was a big guy or something and shot him, right? So I think there was an amount of sympathy put in there. And I think, you know, my feeling is the media and just the public at large that helps inform the media of what to cover night after night sees someone like Von Derrick Myers and says, oh, that guy, I see Instagram pictures of him holding guns and he has an arrest record and all this kind of stuff. How much do you think that plays into it? And does it matter?
I think on the streets it plays very little because even with Mike Brown, I always said it didn't matter what happened to Mike Brown because the environment was there. Mm-hmm. It just needed a spark. And Mike Brown was that spark, right? Darren Wilson lit the fuse. Same thing with Von Derrick Myers. Now, in the media and in the general court of public opinion, you know, they're going to put Von Derrick Myers on trial. Mm-hmm. But on the streets, in the protest, it's not going to be the case.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and if nothing else, I mean, I also, you know, find a lot of, if you're looking for a way forward, all of these incidents, these killings have exposed real problems in our community that maybe locally we were kind of aware of, you know, the police departments that were funded by writing tickets and, you know, these municipal courts and all these kind of things, right? So if Michael Brown hadn't been killed and if Von Derrick Myers hadn't been killed, we probably wouldn't be talking about it.
But even with the police, you got two different police associations in the city of St. Louis.
Fighting each other.
One for black and one for white.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it say about this city?
Yeah.
You know, this city is so divided. And I think, for example, look, race was something that the media in St. Louis tried to ignore. They tried to say, look, we never had any riots in the 60s. We don't have any big riots.
Sure.
So they tried to ignore it. But that wasn't the everyday conversations I heard. That wasn't what I was hearing from people. And so the conversation on the street and the conversation in the media, there was a big separation. You know, two different police associations, think of that. But I'll give you one a couple. Number one, you go to Facebook, there's these pages, you know, you grew up in St. Louis. There's apparently one for black people and one for white people. I don't think it's set up like that. But black people are talking about stuff that white people have no clue, I guarantee you, of any of the, you know, Wilbur's and stuff like that. And then one for white people. So it's just two different lived realities in St. Louis and very few places where they intersect. And interesting, I'm talking about going to Ferguson, Florida schools and McClure North. A lot of, you know, your Facebook friends, you know, people you went to school with. Now, in St. Louis, people hang out with their high school friends for their entire lives, right? But I, you know, because of Islam and different reasons, you know, I have new sets of friends, right? So but there's a few of them that I'm still friends with, mostly my wrestling teammates. I saw a lot of those friendships break up. People went to elementary school and high school. Since August of 2014, they've broke up, cursed each other, blocked each other. And these were people that used to be friends, and it was on racial lines. I saw the white criminal with the white law and order guy hand in hand in defense of the police, and it really broke down on racial lines. And so it's just very telling.
Well, let's get to, we have two or maybe three more things that I want to get to. Yeah. One is, what is the way forward then? Is there... Well, you know, I mentioned that we know more about broadly about the municipal court system.
Yeah.
We know about, and some things seem to be changing. I mean, there are efforts to make things change. There are people organizing and raising money to actually change the kind of the playing field, so to speak, so that people aren't put in poverty because of speeding tickets and things like this. Do you see opportunity or reason for hope, or what needs to change if it's going to get better?
I think you need more. Start with, you need more jobs in St. Louis. I mean, besides tickets and fines, which definitely needs to be addressed. You need more jobs in St. Louis. You need more economic opportunities. Mm-hmm. You can't have generations of people growing up and thinking, I got to move to Atlanta or I got to move to Dallas or Houston. You know, there's no future here in St. Louis. We have a tremendous brain drain in St. Louis. You have to turn that around, and to do that, you have to have opportunity and you have to have jobs. Have to address, obviously, it's so hard to address these civilizational issues of race and culture, et cetera, but they have to be addressed. You need good leadership in the city of St. Louis and St. Louis County. I mean, this region is one. I mean, when you have Steve Stinger coming out against the North-South Metrolink line, and you know what that's all about. Mm-hmm. When you have St. Charles County with hostile policies towards the rest of the region, you know what that's about.
Would you be in favor of a larger, like a consolidation that some people have talked about?
I'm in favor. St. Louis County, I mean, North County could definitely probably go down to five or six municipalities. Mm-hmm. I think there'd be no problem with that whatsoever. But I don't know how that happens. I don't know what.
You see too much resistance. I mean, a lot of these municipalities were literally formed to exclude black people.
Right. So. I mean, I think it'd be perfectly fine. I would love to see one school district and one police department for all of St. Louis County. Mm-hmm. But you would see so much fighting and resistance for that. It's just very difficult to see.
Do you want to discuss your religious conversion? I mean, you're Muslim.
Yeah, I think my conversion to Islam is heavily tied to the issues of St. Louis.
Okay,
I was 17 years old, and the Spike Lee was getting ready to release the X movie about Malcolm X, and as a part of that, bookstores had re-released the autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley. Also, this time in the late 80s, early 90s. There was a lot of socially and politically conscious hip-hop out of the East Coast primarily. And a lot of those, quite a few of them are Muslims. And they would drop a little Islamic terminology within the lyrics, et cetera. So my curiosity was piqued somewhat and I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And when I read it, and I particularly got to the last chapter about the Hajj and about his pilgrimage to Mecca, I said, I got to go to the mosque. And I didn't know where the mosque was. So St. Louis Post-Dispatch had ads for religious services. And mm-hmm. there was an ad that said Introduction to Islam in 3843 West Pine at the Islamic Center. And that class is on Sundays. I started attending that class, started learning about Islam, and started learning about the religion and liked what I heard. I converted in 92. And this is a time I heard one of my political, you know, she's like a closet hater. I ain't gonna call her out, but you know, one of my closet haters said, oh, you know, that just Islam stuff, that's just for attention. Da, da, da. You know, this is 1992. No one yeah. cares about Muslims.
Yeah, the Muslims were fighting the Russians in Afghanistan.
Well, this is even after. You know. I mean, this is even after. That's a big issue. You know what I'm
saying? Right. Well, that wasn't a big issue locally anyway. Right. But if you're
No one cared about Islam. Right. No one cared about Muslims. We were very, throughout the 90s, a very insular community. There was very little outside political engagement. Even when I was voting, they were like, man, why are you wasting your time? Right. You know. So it's a very insular community, and no one was paying attention to us until after 9/11, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that made me leave St. Louis was becoming a Muslim. And becoming a Muslim, I quickly found out that St. Louis didn't have a very good Muslim community, not very developed. And the East Coast, or Atlanta, or Chicago, those were the places to be. And so I moved to New York City, to Brooklyn, which has had long been a history of strong Muslim community. They used to call Harlem Mecca and Bed-Stuy Medina. And I learned that the world is a lot more diverse than black, white, North County, meeting people from the Arab world, from India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Bangladesh, and just widened my cultural awareness, widened how I see the world to meet people and to know people all throughout the world. And then going down to the D.C. area, which is a very diverse area as well. But one thing I'll say, everything is tied together, because my initial big beef with hipsterism and gentrification is what it did to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn, which plays this huge and pivotal role in the history of Islam in America, from the Dawud Islam movement, Masjid al-Taqwa. I mean, so many historic things happened in Brooklyn. And the community is just decimated. Because people can't afford to live there anymore. And the halal restaurants are closing and the halal shops are closing. And people are not just leaving Brooklyn, they're moving to Atlanta, they're moving to the Carolinas, you know, part of this reverse migration. Mm-hmm. And went to D.C., saw the same thing in D.C., you know.
You find yourself back in St. Louis.
Not because of that, but all the things I loved were diminishing, were decreasing. And the things that hipsters love are increasing.
Right.
So when I'm in St. Louis, I'm with that perspective looking 20 years down the road.
If you're looking at that wave in Brooklyn, I think the hipsters have been priced out like a decade ago now. you have so much money transitioning, especially New York, but D.C. and these places are just...
The hipsterism is a subcategory of yuppie.
So you come back to St. Louis. What's the community like here?
The Muslim community.
Is it changed? I imagine it's changed a lot since the time you left.
Changed dramatically. 1992, when I converted to Islam, there were two mosques. Mm-hmm. The Islamic Center, 3843 West Pine at Vanderbilt, was primarily catered to, quote unquote, your immigrant Muslim community. Mm-hmm. And there was, I'm talking about Sunni mosque, you know, there were some others, non-Sunni. And there was the Al Mu'minun Islamic Center on Grand and Cass, which was African-American, primarily African-American mosque. Today, there's more than 25 mosques throughout the metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And there's big concentrations of Muslims, both in South St. Louis City, the Bosnians and the other immigrant and refugee populations, in West County, with your South Asian, Indo-Pak, Bangladeshi community. Mm-hmm. And in North County, there's also with a lot of Palestinians in North County, and West Africans.
Is that a reason for optimism? I mean, especially the Bosnians who came in for whatever reason, they look white, right? So yeah. I think they were accepted in a way that maybe darker skinned people wouldn't have been here, right?
Yeah,
so
I think
a way to normalize Islam in St. Louis? So you have these different populations, so it's not just, it's a very diverse, religious group here.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting with the Bosnians and the race equation because they're white, they look white. Some people don't see them as white, even though they are white. Just, you know, like people didn't see Jews
as white. They're not white, I guess.
Right. So, I mean, I think Tim Wise said whiteness is defined by what you aren't, not what you are. And maybe Islam is one of those things. But obviously the ones that grew up here and the younger generation, they're not going to have an accent. You know, it's going to be very interesting to watch. I've seen some jump on the, very few, but there's a few that have jumped on the Trump train, so maybe they really have become white.
Right.
But, you know, it's a developing community. Yeah. And another thing is, you're seeing the same pattern with them you've seen with other people. Mm-hmm. The ones with good jobs, they're out in South County, in Jefferson County.
Right.
Bevo is really where you go when you're just getting your, you're just landing, you're just getting here. Or kind of the poor, uneducated, underclass of the Bosnian population. I mean, there's some that are staying, but largely it's a community.
Well, this is one thing that maybe we'll hit on probably in a whole nother conversation, but some of the research I've done shows that St. Louis isn't losing people any more than Boston or Denver or other places, but we're not replacing people. And so, you know, imagine the city without that wave of immigrants, which eventually, you know, Bosnians eventually numbered 10 or 20,000 once everyone kind of jumped a couple cities and congregated in St. Louis.
I've been saying for years that St. Louis needs a huge wave, not just the Bosnians, we need four or five waves. I reached out to Mayor Slay's office like 3 or 4 years ago. Patrick Brown, talked to Old North, St. Louis Restoration, a lot of people. This is 3 or 4 years ago. I was trying to get St. Louis to be the hub for Syrian refugees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think growing more diverse would help say this black-white binary that we have here is just not...
And we don't have... And some of this, we're in a very conservative state, so we're not attracting a lot of Hispanics. I grew up in Indiana, which is attracting a lot of Hispanics. Yeah. And in a way, like, you know, once you get a foothold here, you kind of have a pipeline to a population. And you know, when people are looking at coming to the United States, you look at Missouri and there are other places that are more attractive.
Yeah,
right?
Well, we are growing in Hispanic population, not by big numbers, but...
And not like at a smaller percentage than Indianapolis and Louisville and some Kansas other cities
City. Kansas City has a much higher. So, I mean, we are growing. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we were in the fifth grade, we had Daniel Torreblanca came, a Mexican kid, and blacks and whites debated who was going to take him. And it's fine to decide.
How did that end up?
Well, it's fine to decide if you ain't black, you're white. So, and a lot of Hispanics who grew up in the kids, definitely my age, are seen as white. So that's another interesting conversation. Yeah.
Well, let's wrap this up. This has been great, and I think it's been really interesting. The thing we always ask at the end of a show is, it's called the Future Great City Podcast. I believe that St. Louis has the opportunity to be a future great city. What does that take? I mean, we've hit on so many things: immigration, jobs, which everyone can agree on. But what? What does St. Louis look like in 20 years if we've become a great city?
Well, St. Louis can't be a great city until we address problems of race, problem of jobs, crime, despair, education. We have to address all these issues before we can be a great city.
Is there a linchpin to that? Because I've had that conversation with people, and it feels like, I've kind of said, you know, if we set up St. Louis to say, let's solve the race issue before anything else can happen, I think we're kind of screwed.
No,
you know, like,
obviously.
How do we chip away at it? What do you do? What do I do?
I mean, there's 10,000 different
ways. Yeah, there's no good answer. I'm going to keep asking you.
There's 10,000 ways you do it, and it's not one idea. It's not one person, not one.
Oh, it's just, what would make you proud to say you're from? I mean, you are proud that you're from
here.
What could happen? What's the new thing that could happen where you could say, we just got something right? There's one thing that we just changed, fixed.
Well, if we can agree on North-South Metrolink, I think it'd be a great thing.
All right, there we go.
If we can get an NBA team and not an MLS team, so there we go with that.
Oh, man, that's another show.
It's a whole other show.
So, we can get an NBA team. This is a long, long story, but St. Louis could not have an NBA team for a long time because when the ABA moved, there was a contract. And I don't know if most people listening know, but the owners of the ABA team in St. Louis signed a deal basically giving them a share of TV rights, which like in the 70s was almost nothing, but ended up making them multi-millionaires. And it was in perpetuity, and so they went to court multiple times, and I think that was finally resolved. I think the NBA finally just bought them out and said, we're not paying.
I think they died or something.
Maybe.
I think it's over. It's done now. Yeah. But, you know.
So at least, like, we literally couldn't get an NBA team couple decades.
I think 16.8 million people watched the NBA Finals 630,000 watched the, I think the number's right, 630,000 watched the MLS championship game. So, you know, you're talking, you know, if we want to say we're...
But immigrants love soccer, right?
First generation.
And the NBA. Anyway, we're going to talk forever. So, thank you so much for joining us, and really appreciate it. We'll keep talking again, and you want to give your people can find you on Twitter, find you on Facebook.
You can find me on Twitter at Pen of Umar. That's P-E-N U-M-A-R. That's my Twitter. You can like the Umar Lee page on Facebook. I'm also on Snapchat and Instagram. So look me
up. Everywhere. You're not hiding. You're easy to find.
Easy to find.
All right. Thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you to Creatives on Call for sponsoring the Future Great City podcast. Creatives on Call is a staffing agency dedicated to matching creatives with temporary, freelance, and permanent positions in the design and marketing industries. Visit creativesoncall.com. And thank you again to Red Brick Realty, the new full-service boutique St. Louis brokerage firm. Give Scott a call at 314-420-9491 and get $500 off by mentioning the Future Great City podcast when you close a deal with Red Brick. You can subscribe to this podcast via RSS feed or on iTunes, and can follow the site on Twitter at NextSTL. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. NextSTL.com.